Hello, and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum, and today we're talking about Gruyere.
Yeah.
The cheese.
Yes, the cheese. And the region, kind of.
Sure.
But this is one of my favorite cheeses.
Yeah.
And I always bring it to Cheesegiving. Just understood.
Sure. Okay.
But I actually remember the first time that I knowingly had Gruyere. I probably had it before then. But my brother's ex-girlfriend, so I was in high school at this time, she was a vegetarian.
Okay.
And she made these homemade French fries with shaved Gruyere and mushrooms on them.
Ooh.
And that was the first time I was like, oh, so I wouldn't necessarily be skinny if I was a vegetarian. I'd be eating these fries all the time.
Yeah, vegetarianism is not a weight loss plan.
No.
Nope.
No, it can be a healthy lifestyle choice.
Absolutely.
But, I mean, I'm happy that I tried them, and I still, clearly, I still remember.
Yeah.
The moment.
Oh, I don't remember that moment, but no, it's a top-notch cheese.
It's great in grilled cheese.
Oh, it's really good at melting. There
yes.
is a whole section on that later on.
There is, but before we get to that, we should get to our question.
Oh, yeah.
Gruyere.
Well, I'm going to give you a definition that involves a lot about the process of making it, because with cheese, the making is the message. So, the original Swiss Gruyere is a type of cheese made from raw whole cow's milk that's curdled with rennet and with whey from the previous batch of Gruyere in open copper vats. It's pressed into large wheels, usually aged or ripened, that is, for about 6 to 12 months, but anywhere from 5 to 18 or so can happen, or longer. During that time, friendly bacteria eat lactose, that's the sugars from the milk that it's made with, and they poop flavors and acids that help solidify the cheese. Other friendly bacteria and yeasts grow on the cheese's surface, helping create a natural rind and further affecting the flavor, like creating some tasty molecules and breaking down some not-so-tasty molecules. And some water evaporates out until it's down to about 35% moisture content. And a few chemical and enzymatic processes break down some of the protein chains from that original milk. And all of this results in a cheese that's a solid but still pretty soft to the bite and a smooth, not crumbly. It's a ivory to yellowish in color and may range in flavor, but usually tastes a little like nutty, a tiny bit fruity and spicy and salty, and of course, creamy. If I lost you on any of that, see our cheddar episode for more about cheese making.
Yes. Also, very old school, original foodstuff video series video on cheese has some bad graphics designed by yours truly. You want to check that out?
Yeah. And there are also Gruyere-style cheeses, which may differ in production methods and in ultimate product. France does also make a Gruyere that is similar in the broad strokes, but has different rules altogether for what it's supposed to look and taste like. And so much more on that later. It's
oh, yes.
a whole thing.
It is an entire thing. It's great for fondues, Gruyere is, for French onion soup.
Uh-huh. Gruyere is one of the two classic fondue cheeses, along with Emmental. And it's also traditional in the French croque-monsieur, which is a grilled cheese sandwich with Dijon mustard and sliced ham.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
They're so good.
And yes, more about the science of meltability later.
And it is named for the Swiss town Gruyere in the area where the cheese was originally made and is still made there.
Mm-hmm.
The name comes from either Gruyere, meaning forestry officer, or tax collectors, or Gru, meaning crane. And that is the bird on the crest of the counts of La Gruyere. So, mystery's history. I also didn't know Swiss cheese, and this is the cheese with holes in it, is sometimes called rat cheese because it's the cheese rats are always seen with in cartoons. Didn't know that. We still need to watch Ratatouille.
Oh.
I haven't forgotten about
okay.
that.
Okay, all right.
But yeah, now that I think about it, Swiss cheese is a very confusing name.
It is, because there's more than one cheese in Switzerland.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the Gruyere from Switzerland does not have holes in it.
Yeah. The French Gruyere is required to have some holes.
Yes.
But, yeah, Swiss Gruyere has few to no holes.
Right. So confusing.
Nutrition-wise, it's cheese. I mean, a serving size is an ounce.
Yes.
That's a small amount of cheese.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind or give yourself a nice cheese treat.
Have a Cheesegiving.
Have a Cheesegiving.
Yes.
Go crazy with the Cheese Whiz.
All right. Cool.
Numbers.
Yes.
As of 2010, Switzerland produced 29,000 metric tons of Gruyere per year. France produced about 3,000. Metric tons, by the way, are a little smaller than U.S. tons, so it's more like 32,000 U.S. tons. I mean, anything more than like a pound, and I don't really understand it. That's an unimaginable amount of cheese to me.
That's a lot of cheese.
It's a bunch of cheese. I also spent about 3 minutes trying to figure out why there's a difference between metric and U.S. tons, mm-hmm. like specifically why.
Yeah.
But, in those 3 minutes, nothing became apparent. Rabbit hole for a different day.
Gruyere used to be an umbrella term for a family of cheeses in the Rhone Alpine region made in a similar manner, but distinct in taste, including Comte, Beaufort, Abondance, French Gruyere, and Swiss Gruyere. But not anymore.
No.
No. Who gets to claim Gruyere?
Ooh, we'll find out. But first, we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with more
food controversy.
Oh, yeah. Gruyere's history goes back to medieval times, sometime around 1125 CE, in a town called Gruyere. Now, Gruyere, the place, is in Switzerland, but it's on the border between Switzerland and France. And because of this, ownership of Gruyere is disputed.
Mm-hmm.
Like we mentioned before, several similar cheeses by a different name do fall under this umbrella of Gruyere that originate in France and one in the Austrian Alps. And I would like to throw in this probably not true legend in here.
Uh-huh.
The story goes that in 161 CE, Emperor Antonin the Pious met his death via indigestion caused by overindulgence in Gruyere. Probably not true.
Probably not.
No.
They don't think that anyone really created what we know as Gruyere until, the 1100s.
Right.
Anyway.
But fun story. while it's much prized now, it first started as a means of survival, Gruyere did, and necessity. And this region of Switzerland was and is very mountainy, and partly because of this, it was plagued with food scarcity.
Mm-hmm.
But they did have cows for milking. Since the region was mountainous and the cows grazed in pastures that were often uphill from where the peasants lived, and peasants didn't have time to go marching up the mountains to milk cows every day, so they needed to figure out a way to make the milk last longer. So they picked a group of peasants to be in charge of all of the village's cattle and to make cheese from that milk. And they had a couple of requirements for this cheese. First, it had to last in the mountains for the summer.
Okay.
Second, it had to be pretty sturdy, a hard cheese, and large to make the rough journey back down the mountain. And to meet these requirements, they needed a low-moisture cheese. But problem!
Yes?
They could only carry up so much salt to dry out the cheese.
Oh, okay.
So they came up with a system.
A system.
It involved cutting the cheese, oh dear, to produce a very tiny curd particle to reduce the moisture. They then cooked the cheese at a high temperature while constantly stirring it. And this process was draining for the makers. Like, it was hot. It was physically demanding. The work paid off, though, resulting in a full-fat, hard cheese that people quickly fell in love with. So much so that word spread, and the Swiss makers were able to sell it throughout the country and in France and Italy pretty soon after they discovered it.
Yeah. In the 13th century, they were able to build a castle in the town that still stands today. And as I understand it, you can take a tour.
Listeners.
And it's lovely.
Please.
Yes.
Done it.
Let us know.
By the 15th century, cheeses like Gruyere were called Vacherin. And it wasn't until the 17th century that Gruyere officially replaced that name, possibly because this is when the region started to export Gruyere for the first time.
Okay.
As more and more people tried it, the demand grew, and the word entered the dictionary Académie Française in 1762. And along with all of this, we get the origins of a cheese controversy as concerns over its origin grew.
Ah.
During the 18th and 19th century, lots of folks from Fribourg, Switzerland, moved to the Gruyere region, making it bigger and expanding it out into France. And at the time, with no form of cheese copyright or trademark, a lot of imitators started to enter the scene.
Ah.
And Gruyere cheesemakers wanted to change that by defining what Gruyere was and protecting the name. But, as we've said, French and Swiss Gruyere were and are different.
Sure.
Yes. The French and Swiss both argued that they should have claim to the Gruyere name. The French argued that their version of Gruyere was more well-known and that they should get it because of that, while the Swiss argued that they'd been making it longer and Gruyere is from Gruyere, Switzerland. Several meetings took place to debate the issue of Gruyere. 1891 in Madrid, 1926 in Paris, and 1930 in Rome.
Oh, my goodness.
In 1951, the International Stresa Convention on Cheeses, that sounds amazing, by the way, decreed that both France and Switzerland had the right to use Gruyere, despite the confusion around the fact that there were two distinct cheeses going by the same name.
Mm-hmm.
But this did not end the tension between the two countries around the cheese.
No.
Mm-mm,
nope.
No, no, no. In 1958, Comte Gruyere was awarded an AOC, Appellation d'origine contrôlée, or controlled appellation of origin.
Within France, an AOC is meant to recognize regional products made using traditional methods that have these traditional flavors and other characteristics and are, you know, good.
Right.
Yeah.
The Swiss were awarded the controlled designation of origin in Switzerland in 2001, which similarly defines production processes and locations and product.
But France was not done. They applied for Annie, could you help me out?
Appellation d'origine protégée.
AOP, yes, with the European Union. And the AOP is an internationally recognized status that means that no product from anywhere else can properly use the name. It's why sparkling wines from outside of Champagne can't be called Champagne.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. The EU looked into it and eventually put out a report on the matter saying the French case was weak because their cheese was aged outside of the area in which it's produced.
Oh.
I know. The French Gruyere Union dropped the case.
They had holes in their story.
That's what The Guardian said about it.
Hi.
No, great minds, great minds.
We think alike. In 2010, the whole of Europe recognized the Swiss as the official makers of Gruyere with EOP. Meaning Comte Gruyere became just Comte.
And before that, back in 2004, the Swiss helped that process along by developing a blueprint of the acidifying bacteria that give Gruyere most of its texture and flavor. The country has a center for agricultural research affiliated with the government called Agroscope. And yeah, Gruyere's bacterial culture was the first one that they mapped. It's now part of their AOP process. So like if you're making Gruyere in this approved way, you can buy a bottle of the approved culture set or, like, largely create your own the old-fashioned way during the process. But I love that they have this. This is a product.
Yeah.
They're also working on bacterial tracers to verify the origin of any given piece of cheese to make sure that you're not, like slipping imitators in there.
They won't have it, Lauren.
No. The one for Gruyere was still in trials as of 2017, which is the last information I could find about it.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, there has been so much scientific research into the microbiology and chemistry involved in Gruyere over the past three decades, probably because of all of this kerfuffle.
Oh, people, they want to claim their cheeses.
They do. Cheese is important, and I respect that they are taking it as seriously as we are.
I do, too. I do, too.
Speaking of seriousness, I have some very serious melting science to share with you. But first, we've got one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you. So, melting science.
Ooh, ah.
A few science things influence how a cheese melts. All right, first, you've got your moisture content. Because the higher the moisture content of a cheese, the more easily they'll melt. Because of those water molecules sort of keeps them like elbow room in among the proteins, preventing them from clumping up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gruyere is what's called a low moisture cheese, as we talked about before. That is, it's around 35% moisture. It's drier than a fresh cheese like mozzarella, which can have up to 60% moisture content.
Wow.
But more moist than a hard cheese like Parmesan, which is usually around like 30%. That's why mozzarella will, like, ooze when you heat it. but Parmesan will tend to, like, crisp before it really has a chance to pool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Gruyere has just enough water content to facilitate melting.
Mm.
Yeah. Part of moisture content is due to whether a cheese has been aged or not. But aging has another effect on how cheese melts, how its proteins are connected. Okay, so the primary proteins in milk are called caseins. And when you make cheese, these protein molecules link up tight in these long chains. In a fresh, springy cheese, again, like mozzarella, those chains are stretchy and tangly, which is why mozzarella strings out in that, like, classic, like, pizza commercial kind of way. Like
uh-huh.
the like the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Or, heck, like, in a stick of string cheese.
Yeah, exactly.
They string out, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But as cheese ages, enzymes in the cheese slowly break apart those long chains into smaller and smaller bits. And that's why an aged cheese like cheddar or Gruyere melts into smooth puddles that stretch a little but, like, mostly ooze. And it's why they crumble into, like, those large pebbly chunks when they're cool, as opposed to something like Parmesan, which will crumble into, like, wee little dusty bits.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The third thing that influences how a cheese melts is its chemical makeup. And, okay, here's where it would be good to do a rundown of what is happening to cheese when it melts.
Okay.
So, you apply heat to cheese.
Yes.
Yes, you do.
Uh-huh.
Frequently.
All the time.
When the cheese reaches about 90 degrees Fahrenheit, that's about 32 Celsius or a little under human body temperature, the solid fats in the cheese will start to melt into liquid oil. You might see beads of oil on the surface of the cheese, yeah? Mm. But it has to get a little bit hotter than that for those caseins that are really holding the cheese together to give up the ghost. You see, in cheeses that are curdled using the milk-coagulating animal protein rennet, which is most cheeses, this sort of glue of calcium atoms will help hold the casein proteins together in their chains. But as the cheese heats, that glue dissolves, and the cheese just kind of collapses. Like my friend has this old lady cat, Mary, and her joints are pretty good, but when she's done moving around, she doesn't, like, circle and, like, sit and kind of, like, settle in. She just flumps right over.
Oh, yeah.
It's real cute every time. And for Mary, I've noticed that happens after a certain number of pets, but in cheese, it happens at different temperatures.
Uh-huh.
In high-moisture mozzarella, it's kind of low. It's around, like, 130 Fahrenheit. That's 54 Celsius. It can be all the way up to 180 Fahrenheit or 82 Celsius in hard Parmesan. And for Gruyere, it's in the middle, like 150 Fahrenheit or 65 Celsius. But remember, that's in cheeses using rennet. You can also curdle cheese using various acids, like vinegar or lemon juice. And that's how a lot of fresh cheeses are made, like a ricotta or a paneer or queso blanco. As those cheeses form, their casein proteins will bind up with each other, but there's too much acid for the calcium atoms to glue up among them. So when they heat, there's no protective barrier to those proteins. The heat makes the proteins bunch up, forcing out molecules of water, which means that you've suddenly got a dry cheese, which, instead of melting, will just continue firming up and may even brown or crisp. That's why you can simmer chunks of paneer in, like, a curry or a creamy spinach sauce, and they'll hold their shape. Or why you can straight-up pan-fry a slice of queso blanco, and it'll brown instead of melting. And why ricotta in lasagna or ravioli is pillowy instead of oozy. And part of why most vegetarian and vegan cheeses are so totally crap at melting. because although most rennet is lab-created these days, most vegetarian-friendly cheeses are more likely to be acid curdled. And the proteins involved may behave differently than the milk proteins, but sure.
Sure.
Sure. Anyway, back to Gruyere.
Mm-hmm.
It actually has a little bit more acid than some other cheeses of its moisture and age, which dissolves some of the calcium bonds and winds up making it a little bit stringier than, say, cheddar. And yeah, it's right in that happy medium of just enough moisture and just enough aging, all of which means it melts to ooey, gooey perfection. hat tip to David Joachim and Andre Schloss over at finecooking.com for their excellent explanation of all this, by the way, in their article, The Science of Melting Cheese.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, Gruyere.
Yeah, and we'll have to do a whole episode on fondue.
Yes.
That was, I kept, like, avoiding.
Yeah.
Like, there's too many. There's too many. It was too much to talk about.
Yeah. Got to focus.
You do.
My mom used to do fondue every New Year's, and it just kind of cracks me up. I don't know why it was a New Year's thing.
Yeah. I don't understand why like fondue and drinking are always, it's always like, oh man, let's have a celebration with sparkling wine and fondue because boiling pots of oil is a great idea when you're a few glasses in.
Always. Nothing could go wrong there, Lauren. I don't know what you're talking about. This has given me a wonderful pause to remember I was a huge My Little Pony fan.
Oh, me too.
Do you remember the ooze?
The ooze?
The ooze.
The ooze?
The ooze was like this big pollution villain, and it was destroying the My Little Pony homeworld.
I do very vaguely remember that.
But it was like an ooze of gray air.
Oh, no.
More shirts. More shirt ideas.
Dang. Yeah. Okay. All right. Marking that one down.
We're essentially just making shirts that only appeal to us. And I'm not too upset about it. If I can get a My Little Pony Gruyere shirt.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah. Best day.
I don't know what else I can do. I don't know.
Well, this just about brings us to the end of our Gruyere episode. But it brings us to...
Listener mail. It's a Ratatouille-esque, I guess.
Oh.
One day you'll understand.
I guess that's why I was so confused.
Really, this is just a backdoor. This whole show is a setup, and it's just me trying to sell Ratatouille.
It's a long game. I like that.
Yeah. I'm sure I've not succeeded at all, but that's great because it means I get to keep making episodes. Valerie wrote, I recently enjoyed listening to your podcast about vehicles shaped like giant food, and so I'd like to share with you this picture of a vehicle that my family ran across when we were visiting NYC in 2014. This was the L.L. Bean Bootmobile.
Oh my goodness.
That we found in Central Park. I had never heard of this, but there it was in the park. Who knew? I live about 45 minutes from the Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn, Michigan, which was mentioned in your podcast, so I visited its vintage Oscar Mayer Wienermobile many times. Right next to it is a human-sized hot dog bun that kids can climb into and add giant fabric hot dog toppings. Fun! If you ever get a chance to visit that museum, it is an interesting place and very different from any other museum I have ever seen. Henry Ford went collecting famous buildings, such as the one where Thomas Edison invented the light bulb and the one where the Wright brothers invented flight. Plus, there's a building about the Heinz 52 varieties of pickles, and you can walk through these famous buildings in Greenville Village there. And the picture. Well, it's a giant boot.
It's a giant boot with tires at the bottom.
And the license plate, the vanity plate on front says Bigfoot. Yeah. I recommend looking up the picture.
Yeah, it's a giant mud boot. I love it.
I do, too. I'd be very thrilled to see that out in the wild.
Yeah. It's a little bit creepy, as extremely large boots tend to be.
Ooh. Yeah, what if you were, like, asleep and your bed was, like, you were on the same level as a window, and the boot just went by in the night? Yeah, that might...
Nightmarish stuff.
Mm-hmm. The stuff of nightmares.
Jenny wrote, I heard Lauren mention her love of a good sandwich that contains fries and had to give you a heads up on one that would make a great episode, the horseshoe. The horseshoe sandwich is the full size, and a smaller portion is often called a pony shoe. It's an open-faced sandwich made on Texas toast, topped with two burger patties for the full size, one for the pony size, then a layer of French fries, and finally a Welsh rarebit cheese sauce. It's a regional dish in and around Springfield, Illinois, and can be found in a radius of about 50 to 100 miles around that town.
Mm.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds really great. I want to eat that food.
I do too.
Okay.
Road trip time. But in the meantime, thanks to both of them for writing to us. You too can write to us. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
Or you can find us on social media. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram @SaverPod. We do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio and Stuff Media. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thank you, as always, to our super producers, Andrew Howard and Dylan Fagan. Thank you to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.